Jesus is our beacon, not our boundary. Our beacon, not our boundary. In a Chinese restaurant at 110th Street and Broadway in New York City in 1978, the Reverend George Todd hired us to work that year at the World Council of Churches Office of Urban Industrial Mission. He was a character, a colorful fellow. Presbyterian minister whose favorite verse was 1 Peter 5, "Be sober, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour." After reciting the verse, he always allowed himself a little smile. He was one of the founders of the East Harlem Protestant Parish. I mention it intentionally today so that its memory is not lost in the sands of time. 20 years before that Chinese meal and our work in Geneva, he, with a half a dozen others, shared what they had, all their material goods, raising their children together, living together, eating their meals together on the Upper East Side of New York City, and had an impact, a lasting, multi-generational impact on that city, that corner of that great city. He later went on to some bureaucratic work, and finally, when I knew him, had become the director of this office in Geneva, and at lunchtime, and then he began to include us. He ate lunch with Paulo Freire and Emilio Castro and Philip Potter and Connie Parvey and others of that generation and that leadership. His was a lasting example. He said, "I brought you over for heat, light, running water. Basic utility, service." But we weren't much good at that, at least I wasn't. Jan was more valuable to him because she's a wonderful pianist, and they needed music at the Wednesday worship service in that beautiful chapel in the World Council. He brought us really to plant seeds, seeds of hope, seeds of memory, and seeds of promise for the next generation, and it worked. I'm mentioning him this morning, 35 years later. Actually, we're doing the same thing here at Marsh Chapel in our time. He guided us in those years to understand the beauty of the church universal. You know, we live in a wonderful part of the world, and as did our friend George Todd, we want to appreciate the setting in which we've been planted. My mother had a poster that said, "Bloom where you're planted." Well, I have a bone to pick with the undergraduates this morning. A month ago, and all through this last month, we've talked about, "I think you promised, I believe you promised, I thought I heard you mutter or pray that you would go once a month to the seaside, to the seacoast, to the ocean." Many of us are not going to be this close to the Atlantic or any other ocean for most of the rest of our life. I speak passionately as a freshwater fish myself. I know how hard it can be to get here, and here you are, well, an hour and 20 minute walk down to the harbor, or a tea ride to Revere Beach, or you have a chance to walk the coast, perhaps once a day, maybe once a week, at least once a month, while you're here at Boston University. Make your way toward that coastal grace. There's something in that horizon, in that setting, that offers you a saving reminder, a healing perspective, a powerful mindset, which our country and our church in this day sorely need. That is, along the coast, you're going to find a lasting horizon. Blue on blue, sky on ocean, hydrogen on oxygen, light on life. There you're going to find beauty and goodness and truth, the beauty of that lasting, infinite horizon, that capacity to cause us to look up, to look out, to look long. You're going to find goodness, a memory of those who went down to the sea in ships and did business where they learned the deeds of the Lord upon the deep, Psalm 104. You're going to see some truth, and this is the main thing to carry with you in that salt breeze. You're going to see variegated landscape, multiplicities, diversities, varieties. You're going to be in the salt water, and then you're going to come up through the marsh, and then the craggy beach, and then the cliffs. And none of those roads go straight up and down. They follow the coast. This isn't a place where you're going to find 90-degree angles around fields of wheat or corn. This is a place where you're going to see difference. You're going to have an experience of a coastal, lasting coastal grace to take with you. We need that mindset today. You know, there are many ways of keeping faith. There are as many ways of keeping faith as there are people in this sanctuary, those listening across the radio and around the world on the internet. And we at Marsh Chapel in our time are reaching out to the globe. We're grateful, that is, for the work of the Reverend Brittany Lungsdorf, who's with us working with the 20% of the undergraduates at BU who are international. Hers is the first position of its kind in the country, as far as we know. We're grateful for those who've left our midst, come up through the undergraduate ranks, and now are in ministry. David in Texas, Brian in the Middle East, Rebecca in South Africa. We're grateful for the connections now that you're working with as a community, with friends at the University of Tokyo, and with BUS, speaking of Switzerland, with the Institute at BASE, and thirdly, with a little community in the city of Miami Beach. Well, you know, Miami Beach, as my organist says, is so close to this country, you almost feel like you're right here in America. That is, we have signs of the World Communion today with our paraments and with the bread that was baked by the international students. And we're grateful for your global outreach. But the coastal grace that you affirm is much more than that. It's a lasting, abiding sense of freedom, grace, and love the world over. What John Dewey called a common faith, what Howard Thurman called a common ground, and what we in our time call a common hope. Varieties all around the globe. Even this great land has a motto embedded in our life together, e pluribus unum. We tend to remember the unum and forget the e pluribus, out of many, one. If you don't remember anything from your study of the New Testament, you'll want to remember this, that in earliest Christianity, as these 27 books teach us, diversity preceded unity. Diversity preceded unity in earliest Christianity, so the most liberal of the Gospels, John, can say and repeat, "In my Father's house there are many rooms," and, read rightly, "Wherever there is a way, there I am. Wherever there is a truth, there I am. Wherever there is life, there I am." There's something about the coast, about the lasting horizon, that lifts us, guides us out beyond the more limited concerns with which we sometimes operate. You know, we finished our work with George Todd in Geneva after a while, and he sent us back home with some duties. He knew the meaning of Luke chapter 17, this gospel that keeps us balanced as we walk the coast and enjoy the coastal grace. This parable from Luke 17, George would have appreciated because it reminds you that your field work is no substitute for your domestic duties. That is, your outreach and mission are no substitute for the care of the community of which you are a part. Your development and leadership and success is wonderful. I celebrate it wherever you have gone, the papers you've written, the books that you've published, the grades that you've achieved. All that's great, but your field work is no substitute for your domestic duties. That is, we are a community of people who know that it is our work to pray, study, read, worship, give generously, tithing, all. We're here on Sunday. People have such shaky reasons sometimes for not going to church. You know, we pass the church on Sunday with a yawn, thinking that we have all the time in the world. Nothing could be farther from the truth. We're called to balance our personal development and successes and failures and field work with a recollection of the centrality of our domestic duties. In 37 years of preaching, I don't think there's ever been a week in which the main sentence from culture so aptly summarized the meaning of the gospel for the day. And that's a sentence in a different context, in a political rather than in a spiritual context, saying, you don't have the right to collect a ransom just for doing what is your job. That is the sentence that summarizes the meaning of Luke 17. George sent us back to New York City with some duties, one of which was to locate in those bygone years a copy of a book that had just been printed. One of the World Council partners in Africa had desired to have a book that mentioned him in it. This is before Amazon.com. The book is titled, published in 1977, Remarkable Names of Real People, and it's a great read. It's simply a listing of names, including our friend's name, that you may enjoy hearing some of them. A woman in Missouri whose name was, last name was Lane and first name was Memory. Another woman in Kansas whose name was Shanda Lear. Two twins who were from Brooklyn, Horace and Boris Morris. An internist named Dr. Blood, and a list of other such remarkable names of real people, including the person who made the request, a Methodist minister named the Reverend Canaan Banana. He was not the only religious leader in the book. It included the name of the then Archbishop of Manila, Cardinal Sin. Remarkable names of real people. Friends, your name is one of those remarkable names of real people, like Eunice and Lois, who have field work, but stay connected to the domestic duties that are so important for us, particularly as we come to the Lord's table on World Communion Sunday. That is, there is a variegated population representing, bearing witness to faith near and far. Yesterday, Saturday, we had three weddings in this nave, all of them wonderful and beautiful. At 11 a.m., second marriage for both, he with three children, her with four, all under eight and parading in the aisle. Wonderful. At 2 o'clock, a gay couple, two men about 35 years old, dressed into the nines for the moment and gathering a family and friends for that wonderful service. 5 o'clock, a quiet and demure Asian couple reciting their vows with reverence. You would be hard-pressed, no. It would be impossible for you to tell which of those three was the truest and the best and the most beautiful. They all carried a reminder of some true word in the joy of faith when grace is present. They all carried a representation of some good people in the joy of faith when grace is present. They all carried in the music, especially of the Cassavant organ, the hearing of something beautiful in the joy of faith when grace is present. What are we so scared of, folks? There are many ways of keeping faith. George, with his crusty way, would be the first to remind us. I saw George Todd for the last time in 1983, there was a World Council Assembly, speaking of the coast, in Vancouver. I had gotten a pass through my Uncle David as a press person. He was a newspaper man. He ran Newsday, the Long Island newspaper. And I didn't have a way to go, but he found a, a press pass for me, and I got there late. And I walked toward the coast, sky on sea, blue on blue, light on life, oxygen on hydrogen. As Ralph Sockman, an Ohio Wesleyan graduate, said, the larger the ocean of knowledge, the longer the shoreline of mystery surrounding it. Coming late, I stood under the drip line of the tent Philip Potter was about to stand to preach. And there they sang in all the voices of the inhabited earth. In Christ there is no east or west, in him no south or north, but one great fellowship of love throughout the whole wide earth. Jesus is our beacon, not our boundary. He it is who takes our measure. We don't measure him. But he receives us, as 2 Timothy concludes, by his grace and by his power, and not according to our works. In prayerful attention shall we come now soon to this table, remembering Thurman's favorite psalm and perhaps yours as well. O Lord, thou hast searched me and known me. Thou knowest when I sit down and when I rise up. Thou discernest my thoughts from afar. Thou searchest out my path and my lying down, and art acquainted with all my ways. Before a word is on my tongue, O Lord, thou knowest it altogether. Thou dost beset me behind and before, and layest thy hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. I cannot attain it. Whither shall I go from thy spirit? Whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend to heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in Sheol, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there thy hand shall lead me. Thy right hand shall hold me. If I say, let only the darkness cover me and the light about me be as night, even the darkness is not dark to thee. The night is as bright as the day. For darkness is as light with thee.